yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings to all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, the theme today is how can we make sense out of all these bailout programs? You know, Congress is passing bills, three of them so far. What's involved in that? What is the Federal Reserve Central Bank doing? It has an array of programs of loans and grants and bailouts and so forth. What is it doing? You know, we're right in the middle of this. The Fed still keeps rolling out new programs, and Congress keeps rolling out new spending bills here. A fourth one in the works, you know, hasn't even occurred yet, but we'll have to, because the third one, the CARES Act, is just a stopgap. Yeah, that's not enough. And we'll see even that that's not even getting into the economy yet. Okay, so how do we make sense of all this? You know, all this stuff, particularly on the central bank, Federal Reserve side. You know, a lot of confusion there as to actually what the Fed does and how it does it. So let's spend this show trying to deal with that a little bit. And clarify what's going on, even though we're in the middle of it all, you see. It's not over yet, these programs. Of course, Trump would like us to go back to work here in a couple weeks. And, you know, that's all about hopefully they don't have to bail out the economy as much as it looks like they will. In other words, Trump is saying, go back to work at the end of April here, folks. Let's open up the economy, and what the hell? So what if people are dying? We'll get through it somehow, but more important is we keep the economy going and keeping our great businesses profitable and survivable. Right, that's the number one thing by Trump, for Trump here, right? So people are expendable. You know, I know this is how he thinks. And by the way, it's not just him that wants to open the economy prematurely. No, no, it's all the businesses and capitalists behind him are saying, you know, look, it's more important we save our companies than we save, you know, tens of thousands of American lives. That's expendable. Our company isn't. You know, that's how they think. And they're pushing Trump. And, of course, Trump is in total agreement on this, to reopen the economy early, regardless of whether it means later in the summer a second wave here. That's quite possible. You know, these virus pandemics come in waves. They're not just one-time events. You know, you look at all the previous epidemics here with SARS and MERS and Ebola and so forth. They all have two or three waves over 18-month period until you get herd mentality in the economy or a vaccine. Herd mentality is more likely than a vaccine. You know, don't overestimate the possibility of vaccines. You know, you can't always get a vaccine for a virus if it keeps changing. I mean, look at HIV. We don't have a vaccine for that, but we got treatments, you see. So more likely is some kind of treatment. But anyway, let's get back to the programs here that are, you know, this vast array of programs. What are they? You know, what do they actually mean? And what's the relationship between the Fed and Congress? Okay, first of all, you know, when this thing broke immediately, Trump authorized $8 billion to help hospitals and so forth, right? And then, of course, that was not clear, and a second act quickly was passed. That's about $100 billion also to provide medical equipment and et cetera. And then we had the big CARES Act, as it's called, in the middle of March, passed by Congress. All right, they say that's $2.2 trillion. It's been rising a little bit, But keep in mind, you know, the CARES Act, $2.2 trillion, is the effect on the economy, the stimulus to hit the economy. And within that $2.2 trillion is an assumption about what's called the multiplier effect. In other words, the initial government spending will generate subsequent second and third phase spending in the economy. That's what a multiplier is. So it's not actually $2.2 trillion of actual government spending. It's something less plus a multiplier. Well, what can we identify in the CARES Act of actual spending? Well, there's the $500 billion that goes to households in the form of extended unemployment benefits, right? Supplemental unemployment benefits for 4 months, the $600. And for the first time, extending unemployment benefits to self-employed, you know, gig workers, contract workers, of which we have tens of millions in this economy now. They're not considered workers, right? They're considered employers themselves, which is just a nonsense. You know, what happens is companies lay people off and then people hang up their shingle and say they are an employer, independent contractor, right? And they don't have the benefits of the labor laws. And of course, they don't get fringe benefits and vacation benefits, whatever. It's cheaper for the companies. And we got tens of millions of those. I've estimated about 60 million here out of 165 million labor force. Okay, so, you know, that's good. They're extending unemployment benefits to those folks. It's causing a lot of heartburn as to how you deliver the benefits, because the state employment departments that implement and make the payout of the unemployment benefits had no rules for this. It's totally confused. And people who are gig workers and independent contractors, you know, have been trying to get the unemployment benefits, but the state doesn't know how to handle them. States and big confusion going on, and the money's not getting to them. You know, but they still got to pay their rent on April 1st. They still got to pay for their autos, their cars, you know, their car payments. They still got to pay, you know, all the utility bills and so forth, right? But no money's getting to them. And it's not just, you know, the new people who are eligible for unemployment benefits. It's also people, you know, who otherwise are just average workers who are unemployed, and they can't get through. You know, you hear stories on CNN and others about people making 300 calls a day to try to, you know, get their filing in, you know, and they can't because they're just swamped in places like New York. They're swamped. And then, of course, those people who are gig workers and others, I mean, they're not even on the radar of the bureaucrats here. So, you know, the $500 billion hasn't gotten into the economy yet, you know, and it's about a month later. And the same for the $1,200 per person, adult person checks. You know, if you're making $75,000 or below a year of income, right, then you and, you know, your wife or partner can get $1,200 each. And for each kid who is under 17, 16 or under, you can get $500. Now, you know, why only 16 and under? Why 17? I mean, 17-year-olds are in high school, they're at home, you know, and they're a big cost for families. Why did they exclude 17-year-olds? You know, probably just to keep the cost down, you see. Okay, so that's not getting through there. We haven't seen these checks yet. When will we get these checks? Who knows? All right, 2-3 weeks more, probably. And then everyone won't get it all at once. You know, what about people who are retired? How will they get? Will they get their checks right away? Or will that be even longer? So what we got here is $500 billion. Sounds good. And it's a month. And it's still not showing up. You know, just a trickle in unemployment benefits are showing up here. And no checks yet. Well, during the interim of this, the economy keeps contracting at an accelerating rate. You know, now we've got, 17 million people who filed for unemployment benefits in just the last 3 weeks, 17 million. Well, I predict this thing is going to go well over 30 million people by the end of April. 30 million people out of 165 million labor force. That's like 21, 22% unemployment. Yeah, 22, 20, 23%. You know when last time we had that much unemployment? 1932. Yeah, and this is 1932, depression-level employment. On unemployment effects going on. Massive, massive problem here, right? And no end in sight. Well, that's why Trump is desperate to get people back to work. You know, those figures don't look good for him. So, you know, what we got to sum up is the $500 billion isn't really hitting the economy. And as long as it doesn't, you know, what you've got is big problems going on for people being able to pay their rent. Why they did not pass a moratorium 90 days at least on rent payments, I don't know. You know, that would be the simplest way to deal with it, you know. And also, why not suspend, you know, all interest payments or even principal payments on auto loans, right? And what about mortgages? Okay, so they've have a program where, you know, you can have a moratorium on your mortgage. The mortgage companies will add the foregoing of your payment for 3 months. They'll tack that onto the end of your mortgage term, right? So you don't have to pay it now. But not all the mortgage companies are behaving the same. You know, you're going to have to call them up and fight with them to get them to do that. They're not going to do anything unless you get on the phone and push them, you know, and then maybe they'll give you that forbearance. Well, if you're given that forbearance, you know, why can't you do it with renters? Huh? You know, there's no reason why you can't have a government funding program to reimburse landlords, right, for the lost rent for 3 months, 90 days. That program is quite easy to introduce and implement, right? You know, you can even just give them additional tax cuts at the end of their tax year. Not a big problem. But they don't want to spend that. But they're going to have to, you see. They're going to have to do that if they really want to stimulate the economy. Because that $500 billion only puts a floor of 6 to 8 weeks under the collapse of households' incomes. Only 6 to 8 weeks, rather, right? That $1,200, that's all that's going to go. And, you know, not everybody files for unemployment benefits or is even eligible for unemployment benefits. So that 17 million jobless in 3 weeks is really much higher. We're really looking over, you know, 20 million people actually without work, not the 17 million. That's just those who have filed successfully for unemployment benefits. So, you know, really we got like 23-24% unemployment here by the end of April. And yet, you know, we hear these economists saying, oh, you know, by the end of the year, unemployment will only be 6%. Yeah. This is just spin. You know, they're spinning. They don't want to panic people. They're just spinning and marketing the fiction that this is a quick recovery here in the second half. Yeah, we're going to be in a problem the second quarter. You know, GDP is going to collapse 24-30% according to the banks, research departments. You know, unemployment is going to be 30 million. But somehow here by July, August, it's all going to disappear. They're going to wave a magic wand and it's all going to go away. You know, and all those businesses that collapsed, the small businesses in the meantime, oh, they're going to come back, right? They'll just start up again, even though they collapsed. You know, small businesses only have 27 days of cash. After that, on average, they got to go bankrupt. They can't pay their bills, right? And that was as of mid-March. So, you know, small businesses now another week or two are going to start to go belly up, many of them. And, you know, we have 7 million small businesses that aren't even corporations. You know, there's about 9 million businesses in this country, about 2 million are corporations, but 7 million are very small proprietorships and partnerships. You know, maybe S-Corps, LLCs, etc. And those folks are going to run out of cash in a couple of weeks. Okay, so the other part of the CARES bill passed by Congress in March included $350 billion in loans and grants to small businesses, defined as businesses with 500 workers or fewer. Okay, well, that's a pretty big small business, you know. Small business, I always thought, were people with 50 or less employees. But, okay, $350 billion. And that can be grants, in other words, free money. You don't have to pay it back if it's used to maintain payrolls or used to pay rent or utilities. So it's a cash grant, half of that. And half of it is loans, right? And, you know, the loans can be forgiven also if you use them to maintain payroll. So the loans can be convertible to grants. So we got to, you know, assume that that $350 billion will be pretty much just eventually cash grants, either right now or down the road. Okay. It's not enough, is it? 7 million. There's 7 million small businesses out there. You know, do the math. How far will $350 billion go? Huh? To pay rent and payroll and so on and so forth. Well, that's why Congress is panicking now and saying, oh, we need $250 billion more. And that's just in the second quarter. You know, and McConnell wants to push through just $250 billion with no strings attached and not provide any other benefits for a non-business households, in other words, the working class, but Pelosi and Democrats say, no, you know, you gotta add to that here, and that's where we are with that extra $250 billion. So a small business will get $600 billion now, CARES Act 1 and CARES Act 2 working through Congress, right? And $500 billion goes to large corporations. Airlines will get a grant of $58 billion, and Boeing gets $61 billion on top of that. So, out of that $500 billion, after you give the grants to the airlines and Boeing, you got about $454 billion in loans that have been authorized to big businesses, big corporations. So, you know, sum up the CARES Act one. What do we got? We got $500 billion. To households in unemployment insurance and cash checks. We got $300 billion to small business and loans and grants and loan grants. And we got $500 billion to large corporations, you know, about $60 billion going to airlines and Boeings, and the rest to be loaned out to large corporations. And then there's about $100-$150 billion or so in direct aid, further aid to hospitals and clinics and so forth, for buying supplies. So you know that that comes out to about $1.5 trillion from what I can calculate in the CARES Act of actual spending, but somehow that rolls up into $2.3 trillion. And I'm not sure where if that's multiplier effect, you know, that extra $800 billion, or is that some additional spending here and there? Because it's an 880-page bill, which I've tried to get through and haven't yet. Okay, so that's the CARES Act. That's Congress spending. And prior to the CARES Act was $100 billion, emergency medical, and $8 billion. All right, that's the congressional fiscal spending. Now, what about the Fed, the Federal Reserve, the central bank? You know, what is it doing, and how much of what it's doing is the result of authorizations by Congress for the U.S. Treasury, to provide bonds, treasury bonds, to the Federal Reserve, so the Federal Reserve can put the money in the big banks' accounts at the Federal Reserve so the big banks can make loans. Sounds complex, huh? Well, that's how the central bank works, you see. Let me back up and explain it a little bit more. Okay, the U.S. Treasury issues Treasury bonds, right? And it gives those bonds to the Fed. And based upon that money that the Fed has in new bonds issued to it, the Fed will credit the accounts of the big banks. And let's say it credits the big banks with $50 billion, right? The Fed then assumes that the big banks will have $50 billion more in their reserves that they can lend out to non-bank businesses, small businesses, big businesses, right? That's called the excess reserves in the private banks, made possible by the Fed putting bonds and adding to the reserve accounts of the big banks at the Federal Reserve. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because the Fed then assumes that with $50 billion more in it to loan out, the big banks will loan out 10 times that. In other words, they will lend out more money than they actually have in reserves at a rate about 10 times. See, the bigger the bank, like Wells or Chase, you know, the bigger the reserves they have to keep on hand. But if the Fed adds to those reserves, well, then they can lend out more, but they can lend out 10 times that. That's how you get to $500 billion in loans. It works through the private banking system. The lending works through the private banks. You know, the Fed puts money in their accounts. They can then lend it out more, but at 10 times the rate. The Fed can also reduce the amount that the big banks have to keep in reserves, which frees up more money in the big banks to lend out at 10 times. Okay? And the Fed has done that too. The Fed has said, okay, you know, in recent years, we've told you, big banks, that you have to keep a buffer, a money buffer here in case there's a financial crisis. Well, you can reduce that money buffer, big banks, by 2% now. That was recently done, which means they have $500 billion more to lend. So the Fed is putting money, extra money, in their accounts to lend at 10x and saying the money you already have in your accounts, you don't have to keep for emergency financial reasons, you can lend that out to the tune of $500 billion more. So the big banks are flush with cash, you see. That's why the stock is going up, because every time they lend, they get from the Fed a fee of 5% of what they lend, you know, in addition to whatever interest rate they loan it out as. Now, what we got is a bottleneck at the big banks. You know, they aren't lending it out as fast as the Fed is giving it to them. They aren't lending it out. Why? Because the big banks are gaming the system. The big banks are manipulating the Fed and the government. They're using this as an opportunity to negotiate with the Fed and the government and to demand concessions. What kind of concessions? Well, concessions that have to do with financial regulations that were passed in the last decade. They want to unravel those, you see. Part of the concession I've already mentioned was that they get to keep or have to keep 2% less in emergency funds, right? They got that concession from the Fed. But there's also other financial deregulation concessions they're demanding here. And they're demanding protection from the Fed in case any of the loans they make go bad. Then the Fed has to pick up the tab. Ah, what is that? Well, part of the deal by the private banks is that not only they get 5% fees off the top for the lending, in addition, they can sell those loans back to the Fed if they want. Oh, in other words, that they think that the company, you know, that they've loaned to a small business might not be stable and make it through the recession here and go bankrupt, you know, then that loan would default and be worthless. What they're doing is saying, okay, before that all happens, we want to sell this back to you. And it's unclear whether they're going to charge a fee or get a price or something when they sell it back to the Fed. So the big banks are totally protected, you see. And they're using the situation to extract all these big concessions. And they're getting them. They're getting them because we are at the mercy of the big banks, you see, in this system. You know, just think of it. If we had a public banking system, we wouldn't have to go through the private banks, right? And let them be a bottleneck and use it to lobby and extract more from us. No, we wouldn't have to do that. We'd have a public banking system. The Fed would be at the top of the apex here and would loan directly, you know? And there would be no 5% skimming off the top, and there would be no selling it back and so forth. Hey, look, bank stocks are going through the roof now. They're rising because they know this is a big slush fund they're getting. Investors know it, and they're going to be very profitable. You know, the Chases, the Wells, and so forth, they're going to do quite well in this crisis. So, you know, that's how the banking system and the Federal Reserve and the Congress and the government are interconnected in this bailout. You know, Congress authorizes the Treasury bonds. The Treasury gives the bonds to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve then credits the electronic accounts of the private banks and hopes that the private banks lend out 10x, 10 times as much. And that's what that $450 billion left in that CARES Act, $500 billion in loans to big corporations. You know, airlines and Boeing skimmed off $50 billion in direct grants here, and that left $450 billion left. Well, that $450 billion will be loans extended by the private banking system to large corporations. Now, in addition, there's $350 billion in the CARES Act that's supposed to be loans and grants to small businesses. Remember, we mentioned that? Half of that will be immediately grants, and half of it will be loans. And it's unclear to me whether the loans to small business will come through the Small Business Agency, SBA, direct from the government, or whether those loans, too, will go through the private banks. I haven't been able to clarify that. And then we got $250 billion more in loans to small businesses that's coming in the next stimulus bill. Okay, so, you know, at least $600-700 billion in the CARES Act is going to go directly through the private banks, and they're gaming the system right now. And not much is getting out there, and small businesses are running out of cash after 27 days, which is another week or two, and they're going to go under. And once they go under, you know, they're not going to magically reappear here in August, September. No, they're gone for good. And so are all those jobs there gone for good. And all the tax revenue from these small businesses will be gone for good. You know, oh, but economists say it's going to snap back, right? That there isn't going to be, you know, great wounds to the economy and hangover that's going to keep the recovery very slow. No, they're saying something different. Okay, so that's the CARES Act, right? Three main elements. To sum up, $500 billion to households, not hitting the households yet much, $350 billion to small businesses, not getting out there much in time, and $500 billion to large corporations who probably don't need it. You know, most of these large corporations will take these loans because they'll be very cheap, right? They'll take these loans and they'll want to try to pay dividends, continue dividends to the shareholders, and they'll, you know, provide bonuses to their senior managers and so forth. This is virtually free government money, so they'll take it, but they don't really need it, most of them, you see. Why? Because they knew this was coming in January and February, then they started loading up on cash. How did they do that? Well, a number of ways. One, they drew down their credit lines with the big banks. You know, a credit line says, you know, you can borrow up to $1 billion over the next 24 months. Well, they took the whole $1 billion example here right now, and they put it on their books, and they're hoarding that drawdown, that credit drawdown. Plus, they issued corporate bonds at a record level of hundreds of billions of dollars in just 1 or 2 months here, and they're sitting on that cash too. Plus, they're selling off some of their assets, you know, some of their stocks and assets and bonds and so forth, you know, as the crash occurs. They've been selling off that and accumulating cash on that. So they're sitting on trillions of dollars, the big corporations, you know, and now Congress says we're going to give you $454 billion more in loans if you want them, right? And then Congress says, oh, but you can't use it for rewarding yourself, senior managers, you know, and you can't use it for dividends. Well, who the hell's going to check on that? You know, the feds don't have enough staff to really prevent that and make sure that they're not gaming the system. They'll game the system. They know how to get around that. Okay, so that's the how the Fed plays in the CARES Act, right? It's the conduit for at least $600-700 billion in loans. Mm-hmm. And the rest is direct from Congress, direct spending. All right, so now let's get to the Fed, right? How does the Fed play in this game? Well, the Fed really is the source of bailout here. You know, the Fed's mandate has always been to bail out the banks. And that's what they did in 2008. They bailed out the banks to the tune of $5 to $6 trillion. Just in what's called QE, in other words, the Fed directly buying up financial securities, mortgage bonds, and so forth from investors, individuals as well as institutions and companies, right? The Fed just, you know, printed the money electronically, bought that, put that bad debt on the Fed's own balance sheet. You know, we just transferred the debt from the private sector to the government. But it was bailing out the banks and financial institutions. You know, in fact, in 2008, they could only bail out the commercial banks, according to their own rules. You know, Chase and Morgan, you know, those what we call commercial banks that take deposits from individuals like you and me, right? But the Fed, under the emergency, started bailing out what's called shadow banks, you know, money market funds, investment banks, you know, hedge funds and so forth. All of them could come in for the free money through what's called special vehicles, where these financial guys just come in and say, okay, we'll borrow money from the Fed and we'll tell you what interest rate we'll pay for it, you see. That's what the special facilities were all about, set up for, you know, stockbrokers, set up for money market funds and so forth. They all came in and got their free money from the Fed. So that was an expansion of the Fed's mandate, you might say, beyond just commercial banks to what is actually shadow banks, which are just as big as the commercial banks now. You know, the hedge funds, the equity funds and so forth, they have more assets than even Chase and so forth. And the money flows between those two sectors in the private banking system. You know, the shadow banks are sometimes called capital markets, right? You know, a euphemism for private equity and hedge funds, capital markets, they call them. Okay, so the Fed expanded itself and its mandate, meaning what it was told by Congress it could originally do, in the emergency, and Congress did nothing, let them do it. But now the Fed is expanding its mandate, you know, manyfold further, because now it's not just bailing out banks, it's bailing out non-bank and non-financial corporations. And it's bailing out state and local governments. It's bailing out everybody. The Fed is becoming the garbage can for credit. Yeah, for all the debt. Throw me your debt. Fill up my garbage can with your debt, folks, business folks out there. I'll eat it all, right? So the Federal Reserve, the central bank, has expanded its role in the capitalist economy. It's the receptacle for all debt, you know, all questionable bad debt, questionable debt, you know, dump it here, right? That's what the Fed is. Expanded its, and Congress has done nothing about that, you know, which means that the central bank is propping up the capitalist system and monetary system and capitalism itself as never before. That's a sign of weakness, you know, in the capitalist economy, that the state has to come in and bail out even before there's a crash. You know, that's the other fundamental thing here compared to 2008. The Fed is bailing out markets, bailing out banks, shadow banks, even before there's a crash, even before. You know, back in 2008-09, it was after the fact, right? The crash was occurring, let's bail out these banks, and oh, you know, let's throw some money through what was called the TARP fund by Congress bail out the auto companies, you know, about $100 billion bailed out the auto companies there in 2008, and another $180 billion bailed out the big insurance company AIG, and billions bailed out the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac agencies. So, you know, that $700 billion TARP bill was a congressional bailout bill, but it didn't bail out the banks back in 2008. The Fed bailed out the banks to the tune of $4 to $5 trillion, maybe more. Was bank bailout. You know, the $700 billion in TARP that was passed in October, you know, initially to bail out the banks and homeowners, only half of it got spent, you know, on auto companies and AIG, and the other half was returned to the Treasury because very, very quickly they turned to the Fed to bail out the banks. And then Congress passed $787 billion fiscal stimulus bill in January 2009. You know, that fiscal bill was very ineffective, very. You know, it was mostly $300 billion in tax cuts to businesses that they hoarded. It was $300 billion in grants to state and local governments, most of which they hoarded too, and long-term infrastructure that didn't have a big effect on the economy right away. By the way, you know, Congress, the House, wanted to pass $150 billion in consumer tax cuts, but Obama shot it down because Larry Summers told him, you know, the economy can't absorb that tax cut for households. Yeah, well, he was a representative of the big bankers, of course. You know, so it was very poorly composed, and the magnitude of the 2009 bailout on the fiscal side was insufficient. You know, and they had to add some programs after that, like cash for clunkers to get the auto spending going, first-time home buyers, you know, to get you know, $20-25 billion there to help the mortgage industry. But it was the main reason why we did not get a robust recovery under Obama. You know, only about 60% recovery occurred. That was of normal, 60% of normal. Very slow recovery for Main Street America. But the banks got bailed out right away, you see. They got bailed out right away by the Federal Reserve. But a bank bailout is not sufficient to really stimulate a robust recovery. Because in these crises, bankers will sit on most of the money. You know, based on uncertainty, they will only loan to the very best companies who probably don't need it, or they will invest the money in the shadow banking system who will plow it into the financial markets. And that's exactly what happened after 2009. And another reason why bank bailouts don't really stimulate rapid recoveries. And of course, the fiscal program, Obama's recovery program, was insufficient and poorly composed as well. That's why we got that slow recovery for 6-7 years. You know, it took us 5 years after the crash to get back the jobs that we had in 2007 before the crash. It took 5 years. Yeah. And not only did the jobs take 5 years to come back, but those that came back were at lower pay and fewer benefits. And that means less wage income and therefore less consumption. And people had to borrow more money credit to maintain their consumption levels. And that's why households are up to their ears and elbows in debt now. You know, even a poor recovery under Obama was made possible by credit, household credit and borrowing. Okay, so that's a lesson for where we are today. You know, the massive bank bailouts don't necessarily mean a recovery that's robust. Well, you know, as I just said, the Fed is bailing out non-banks as well this time, for the first time. Well, how is that working? Well, let's turn to the Fed. You know, we describe Congress as CARES Act and the other acts and their main elements. But the real effort to bail out the banks and the private non-bank sector is coming through the Fed once again, you know? Why do we always make this a Fed central bank monetary policy-led driven recovery? Because the bankers like everything to go through their books, you see, because they skim it off and they make a lot of money. They don't like direct spending directly to households, because that money doesn't come through them. They aren't the bottleneck. They aren't the conduit, you see. And the bankers pretty much run economic policy in the U.S. government in the 21st century now. I mean, you know, look, Steve Mnuchin, senior guy from Goldman Sachs, Gary Cohn from Goldman Sachs, you know, a lot of the appointees to the Fed, New York Fed and District, Goldman Sachs, you know, this is government by Goldman Sachs, as far as economic policy is concerned. Who wrote Trump's multi-trillion dollar tax cut, 2018 tax cut? Well, it was Mnuchin and Gary Cohn, Goldman Sachs, behind closed doors, and then dropping it on Congress here right before the Christmas recess. And, of course, Democrats couldn't do much because they were just a minority in both the House and the Senate at the time. And they pushed that through. That's a big bankers, investors, tax cut bill. I've talked about that many times here. Right? So, you know, we got the same thing going here with the Fed. Well, what are the dimensions of the Fed monetary bailout to date? You know, it's still a moving work in progress. Well, first of all, we had a problem here with a market called the repurchase agreement markets late last year, a sign of fragility and stability in the banking system. And the Fed had put $500 billion net into the repo market, which is the banks loaning to each other. That's what the repo market is, right? Repurchase agreement, repos, right? $500 billion into it, even before the crisis began. And then when the crisis hit initially, you know, in February started, what did the Fed do? Well, the Fed put another $1.5 trillion into the repo market in 30 and 60-day loans, into the repo market. And at the same time, it engaged in $700 billion, the Fed, of purchases of mortgage bonds and treasury bonds as a precaution, you know. So the Fed put $2.2 trillion into the private banks even before this crisis erupted here. And then, of course, you know, the Fed gets the $500 billion to loan to private banks under the CARES Act, and much of the $350 billion to small business. Now, on top of that, it just announced here last week what it calls its Main Street program. You know, under the CARES Act, what did you get? $500 billion for big corporations, $350 billion for small businesses. Well, what about the mid-range? And what is the mid-range? Well, the mid-range, middle-sized companies are defined by the government as having 500 to 10,000 employees. You know, that doesn't sound too mid to me, particularly at the 10,000 range, right? So now they've authorized another $600 billion in loans and grants to these mid-sized corporations. $500 billion to the large, 350 and another 250 coming for the small, and 600 billion now to the middle sized, right? With revenues of over 2.5 billion revenue, I think some of them have. I'm not sure about that number, right? And they can borrow up to $1 million, you see. Okay. So that's direct through the Fed, through the private banking lending. You know, so the big banks are going to be able to manipulate 500 billion, 350 billion, you know, or at least part of 350 billion if it's not going through the Small Business Agency, and another 600 billion, 600 billion mid-sized corporations, right? With less than 2.5 billion in revenue. That's a lot of revenue. And they can get loans, as I said, up to $1 million. These mid-size corporations. Okay, so 500 billion, 600 billion, and part of 350 billion going through the banks, right? 5% fees, selling back the loans if they want to, getting deregulation in the process, right? Now, that's not all the Fed is doing. Part of this Main Street program, the Fed is also giving money directly, indirectly, let's say, to state and local governments, because they're like economic entities, you see. They provide some of their spending, state and local governments, you know, cities, counties, utility agencies, and so forth, by issuing bonds, you see, in what's called the municipal bond market. They sell these bonds in the municipal bond market. Well, you know, no one wants to buy the bonds of these government, state and local government agencies if it looks like they're not going to get any tax revenues because the economy shut down. In other words, they become a big risk here. So private investors, you know, shadow bankers and the big investors don't want to buy muni bonds. And the muni bond market froze up. You know, look, this is a $3.9 trillion market. This is a big market, muni bonds, right? So what the Fed is doing now in its Main Street program is not only giving mid-sized corporations $600 billion in loans, it's giving $500 billion to state and local governments, right? The Fed, in this case, is going to directly buy muni bonds. This is like almost like a QE program where the Federal Reserve actually buys these securities, buys them up, in order to increase the demand for them and raise the price for them in the market, which makes it attractive for private investors to start buying munis again, you see? So, you know, direct buying of municipal bonds is occurring under the Main Street program now for cities with over a million population, counties over 2 million population, all the states, and Washington, D.C., right? And they'll buy these for 2 years. So the Fed thinks this thing is going to last 2 years at least, right? Or they wouldn't say we're going to buy them for 2 years, huh? Okay, so that's the Main Street program. Another $600 billion for mid-sized corporations and another $500 billion for local governments, right? You know, they've said that, the Fed has said that, you know, this is open-ended. We'll do what we have to. If we have to throw in more, right? And they're going to throw in more, as I said, $250 billion for small businesses. Well, that's how the Fed works and Congress work. They work in consort, right? And Congress has some direct spending, and Congress has some authorization of bonds for the Treasury to put in the Fed, and the Fed then credits that to the electronic accounts of the big banks, and the banks then theoretically can lend up 10 times in these loans that go to big corporations, middle-sized corporations, and to some extent small corporations small businesses, although that will probably be mostly direct grants. Now, this isn't the whole picture, folks. No. There's big tax cuts on top of all this going to business. Big tax cuts. Well, what tax cuts here? Well, we've heard about they can delay their tax deadline filing, you know, both individuals and companies, and IRA contributions and so forth. You can borrow from the IRA now up to $100,000 until July. But that doesn't have any net benefit in terms of the bottom line of companies. It's just delays, okay? But there are other tax in the CARES Act. You know, I haven't even looked in the other acts, but there are other tax cuts and credits to business. For example, right, you will get, as a company, a tax credit on last year's taxes or, you know, 2019 taxes and 2020 taxes due, a 50% if you continue paying payroll. Okay, 50% of your payroll costs up to $10,000 per employee, right? You can get a tax credit for next year on your taxes. Well, that's going to be easy to game, right? You just say, well, I was going to lay them off, but I didn't lay them off. You know, therefore, 50% up to $10,000 of the wages paid, you know, I'll deduct that as a tax credit. Well, it's not an deduction, it's a credit, which is better than a deduction. My taxes next year. Well, that's a nice piece of a subsidy, isn't it? On top of that, now, there's a payroll tax credit of 6.2%, which is what businesses pay, 6.2% of the wages paid into what's called the Social Security Trust Fund, 6.2%. Right, up to $137,000 now. Employers pay 6.2% for Social Security fund, and workers pay 6.2% for Social Security fund. Right? Well, you know, businesses are, all businesses now can defer paying into the Social Security fund their 6.2%. Of course, workers can if you're still working, right? You're going to have to continue getting that deduction, but businesses can, you know, defer 6.2%. Now that's a deferral, which means that by the end of 2021, they have to repay back into the Social Security Trust Fund that 6.2% or half of it, and then the other half they have to repay by the end of 2022. So they have to repay that 6.2%. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that Congress and the Republicans are not going to forego that repayment? Of course they are. You know, this is just a way of getting the payroll tax cut through. And it's going to weaken Social Security. You know, Social Security Trust Fund, by the way, has $2.9 trillion surplus in it. And they're just dragging that surplus. And Republicans like to do that because that way they can say, oh, Social Security is in trouble. We got to cut and cut benefits and so forth. Yeah, they're starving the Social Security beast with a plan here. And they have been for decades. And this payroll tax deferral, right, is an example. The deferral will turn into a permanent, non-repayable arrangement, you know, just like the loans can be converted to grants by businesses, though, so most of them will be grants. And they're undermining the tax system. So payroll retention tax credit, 50%, and payroll tax cut, 6.2%, right? And self-employed can cut 6.2%, right, out of what they have to put in quarterly. Right. And then there's a retro tax cut recovery. In other words, the Trump tax cuts of 2018 will be expanded going back to 2013. Businesses will be able to cut their taxes per the 2018 rules back to 2013. So we got a massive tax cut on top of all of this.